my friend. This is Desmond Leslie speaking to you from London. I haven't prepared an address. I never do. I'm just going to talk to you about sources. And as we talk, we may learn something, because it has been said that the speaker is also a listener. So there's no need for me to tell you people what sources are. We know that. We know that when you have sorted out the hoaxes, the illusions, the balloons, the light inversions, and a lot of perfectly normal things which at certain aspects can look like saucers, we know that when you've got rid of all those, there is a hard residue left which the Air Force prefers to call unknowns. They merely call them unknowns because they look so suspiciously like aircraft of a type thoroughly beyond our technology that if they were to call them knowns and say they were spaceships, they would be admitting in effect that the Air Force is obsolete and that an alien race can come here and fly around our airlines and our air lanes, that there's nothing whatever we can do about it. So, the authorities really are in a bit of a spot. I don't think we should judge them too harshly. Admittedly, they've made a muddle, as Ruppelt's excellent book, UFO, explains. But I think the time is coming when they will have to face up to it and make some announcement. Or it is made for them by our space visitors. I've talked to important people here, including cabinet ministers, one of whom is a complete believer. And he's told me their attitude is to say as little as possible until they can present the whole picture. That is, not just say these are spaceships, but say these are spaceships. This is what they have come for, this is who they are, and this is what they plan to do. He told me if he was to go into Parliament and say that saucers were spaceships, he would lose his job because half the people just simply wouldn't believe it. Well, that of course is perfectly true. People have been told so many muddling things, and lately they've been laughed at, anyone who's believes in saucers, but I think the people on the whole would not believe it. But they very quickly believe it if a real lead was given and a series of statements made. However, maybe it isn't quite yet the time for that. After all, saucers in their new form, that is, since 1947, when we date the year one of sorcery, Arnold's case. I'm not talking now about the old sources, the antique ones and those of antiquity, but speaking in the present era, starting in 1947, well, the sources have only been with us 9 years, and I think in that time they've achieved a great deal. They have got the whole world talking about them. Maybe half the people still skeptical and laughing, but after all, in interplanetary and cosmic timetables, what is 9 years? It's only a minute. What they've achieved so far is to get people thinking the possibility that maybe this rather scrofulous little biped that walks around messing up our planet is not the only living, intelligent being in the universe. In fact, may not be intelligent being at all compared to life forms on other more advanced systems. This thought wave, as I like to call it, seems to be the main thought that is being put out and suggested by this visitation. Just the idea that Earth is not alone in the men-bearing globes. It is just one of many millions. And I see the idea is now being picked up and accepted by some astronomers who previously had rejected the idea was an extremely interesting book by Fred Hoyle called Frontiers of Astronomy. Well, he has abandoned a lot of old beliefs about the Earth's creation and come to the conclusion, as have many eminent astronomers, that solar systems such as ours are not a freak, an unusual occurrence, but that every sun of a particular type resembling ours has a solar system. In fact, I believe that many astronomers now think that every star, some point in its career, will have children. And I don't see why not. Because, you see, really the answers to everything are not found through telescopes or in the dust of ancient libraries or in the wonders of a modern laboratory, but they are found in the simplest things all around us. When Zoroaster, the great prophet, lived and gave his wonderful teachings to the world in Persia, the king sent for him and asked him to teach him. The prophet replied by sending him a grain of corn, and he said, "This will be your teacher." Well, the king was very angry because at first he didn't see the point at all. But later, when he calmed down, he realized that the life cycle, the germination, that all the forces working in that little grain of corn were exactly the same forces as germinate and create a universe. And that if you studied one and got to understand it, you would understand the other. You see, divine law is very simple. There is only one law, and everything follows that pattern. So if you can understand it in a grain of corn, you'll understand it in a universe. And many scientists are coming to understand this. They're beginning to realize now that the atom and the universe itself are the same thing. That an atom has no size or position, that it is as infinite as the universe. And therefore, we are beginning to find a scientific meaning to old expressions such as God is everywhere. It is perfectly true. All matter interpenetrates all other matter. The forms, the boundaries that make this object separate from that object, this molecule separate from the other molecule, are only appearances. They are necessary appearances. They are necessary for the great purpose of the universe. And that purpose, in its simplest form, is simply education. You might say that the material universe, when it comes into being through various processes, as it might like to say, crystallizes or densens from pure spirit. When it arrives, it is unconscious. It is life, but unconscious life. And the whole purpose of the great universal period appears to be the awakening of that in unconscious life into conscious life. And that is achieved by forms, changes, motions, and all the other processes we're beginning to become aware of now that we ourselves have reached the first conscious stage known as men. Well, if that is a universal proposition, which it obviously must be, it must be going on everywhere, not only in the myriad worlds of our own planets, of our own planet, the great world we live in, and the little microscopic worlds the smaller creations live in, and the sub-microscopic worlds of atoms and molecules, but on every other planet, every star. In fact, I'd go further. I would say it is going on in space itself, because we know now there is no such thing as space. There is mere emptiness. There is no such thing as nothing, no thing. Every dot, every cubic millimeter of space is filled with something, not necessarily the appearance we call physical matter, but let's say energy, which is a word we use for an unknown substance which we know exists because we've seen its work, its results. And that energy, again, is only part, an aspect of a universal or cosmic force, which is, again, the manifest aspect of the great being we call God. All right, then, here's our little grain of corn that Zoroastra gave to the king. Well, there are millions of grains of corn, just as there are millions of planets scattered around. On them, life must be evolving. On some, it probably hasn't yet really started. On others, it may even have finished, and the planet lies empty, such as the twin planet of the solar system, the moon. Because I correct myself there, the moon is probably not empty. There are definitely things going on it. But I feel the original moon races have left it long ago, and this old shell of a world is now being used for something else. Maybe one day our planet will be used for the same. Another great teacher of the universal secrets is the sea. In the old days, a teacher used to make his class sit at the beach and watch the tide. And after some while, he'd ask them what they'd learned. Well, in the sea, you again have a perfect model of the universe. The great ocean of space is here represented by the great ocean of water. You have the great universal ebb and flow in the tide itself. There is a time when there is water manifest on the beach. There is a time when that water has withdrawn. There is no water. We would say there is nothing. Within that tide, there are many waves. Within the waves, there are many little ripples and eddies, and within those eddies, even smaller ones. Well, now, one of the smallest ripples on one of the smaller waves might correspond to our civilization. You see, it is merely an appearance, a shaping of the one substance. It takes its form, changes. The wave breaks and withdraws. Another wave takes its place. But the one substance, the life itself, is continual, changeless, and eternal. The waves are gaining wave experience by their constant motion, just as we are gaining much more rapid and intellectual experience by the constant motion of our lives, trials, joys, sorrows, all of which are equally good. That is the point the Lord Buddha made so clear, that one should neither resist nor seek after inordinately joys or sorrows. They come to us, and each one has a thing to teach us. You cannot say either one is good or bad. They both can be used as part of our education. Well, I'm not going to talk too much about our planet. We know quite a lot about it. But, you see, if these universal processes are universal, and a study of astronomy shows they are, the same motions are going on in other galaxies as in this one, and if the universe is a universe, that is one substance, one being, one thing, similar things must be going on all throughout it. It's like a vast school. It is the house of many mansions that Jesus Christ referred to. And like a vast school, there are kindergarten classes, junior classes, senior classes, and then there are even graduates who have passed out of the school and sometimes return as teachers. Well, it's my belief, may not be true, I don't know, but some people follow it, that a lot of our visitors coming now are graduates of this junior class, this Earth School, returning voluntarily to help us when the time comes, to try and prevent us making the same mistakes that they may have made, and to be with us for a long time now, so that when we are ready, when we have raised our consciousness to accept them, they will be able to accept us. You see, you've got an analogy, really, in the colonization of the black races by the white. There you've got a perfect example of how not to go about it. The white races, which were several thousand years in advance of the black, whizzed in with rum, Bibles, beer, gunpowder, diseases, all modern improvements, and tried to force our type of life and culture upon people who probably weren't yet ready for it. And also, most of this was not done with good intention. It was done to obtain a nice cheap source of labor and to exploit for our own profit anything these underdeveloped countries had to offer. Well, we're now reaping the karmic harvest of that. South Africa is a good example, and so are the southern states, where the awkward situation has been created by the ill treatment of a lesser developed race by a race which should have known better. Mind you, I can't generalize. The whites did do a great deal of good and probably helped many colored people a great deal, but the main way the thing was conducted was haphazard, selfish, and very unwise. Now, our friends, we say about them, why don't they land here, put our world right? Well, you see, that's just what we tried to do. We rushed off the desert islands to put them right, to civilize them, and look at the result. They could not come in now and impose a culture several thousand years ahead of ours upon us. That would be the height of folly, and they would never do it. But in the great universal law, there is another law which might be set up to say this: thou shalt not interfere, thou shalt mind thy own business, thou shalt only help when help is asked for. You see, every planet, like every class in every school, has its own syllabus. Every country has its own syllabus. The lesson being learned in one land for incarnating souls is not quite the same as that in other lands. Therefore, if you try and interfere and impose a foreign culture or try and standardize a certain belief and make people accept it, well, you're just interfering with the creator's program. You're rarely good at saying, I know better than God. Such a fine fellow, I'm going to put these fellows right. Well, that is the mark of a very junior soul. And all teaching has to be offered with the utmost circumspection. But most, it can only be offered for people's consideration if they are ready for it, or rather, if their particular teaching is what they require, they will accept it, because the high soul knows infallibly what its personality should take, and it will guide it. This, what I'm speaking about now, may be unacceptable to some who listen, in which case, for goodness sake, don't bother with it. If a time comes that this kind of talking is of use to you, you will receive it. So let us sum up then. What our friends have done, well, they have made themselves known. They have not yet been universally accepted, despite a great deal of evidence. Now, people have said, why don't they give one absolute foolproof concrete case, such as landing in a public park or in the middle of a city and putting their ship on show? Well, let's consider a minute. Would that be wise? First of all, they would be forcing us to believe something ahead of time. They would be forcing certain knowledge on us, that is, the knowledge of more evolved of other races, other parts of the universe. That would be unwise, for a start. Secondly, of course, would be a major panic, and the fourth baseman would possibly be torn limb from limb.
thirdly, if they did it in one country, they'd have to do it in every other country, because if a force landed in America publicly, Russia would panic and say, we must have it too, or we'll fight you. Maybe they wouldn't say it in that way, but immediately the military advantage would be foremost in everyone's mind, and people would be frightened, and you'll know there's so much tension as it is, but a thing like that would only increase the tension and perhaps precipitate the one thing our friends wish to avoid. To do it the other way, to land in every capital city simultaneously, would probably convince some of the governments of this world that a major invasion had taken place from space. No, we're just not ready for that. You know, I believe the same rules apply to this as apply to the so-called miracles. The great vision, the wonderful things that were done to demonstrate the existence of the divine power. There was always a let-out clause to every miracle. Nobody had to accept it. Nobody had to see the same vision. We say if angels exist, why don't they appear? Well, why should they? I mean, who are we to think that the whole purpose of the universe is to make us accept it? And then the Duke of Wellington meeting a young lady in the park in London, she rushed up to him and said, it's a happy day for me, Duke. I find I can accept the universe. The old Duke looked at her stonily and replied, Madam, you damn well better. Well, you see, it doesn't really matter a damn whether we believe in this or that or the other, or whether we don't believe in anything. God is not dependent on our kind acceptance of the program, of the infinite wonders around us. If we don't choose to observe them and accept them, well, it's our loss. Nobody else is going to be the loser. This process of life here takes place many, many times. We come back again and again and again. We have a lot to learn. And one life is really just like a day at school. Well, there's a limit to what you can learn. And nobody's going to force the answer on anybody. It isn't done that way. It's just like a class saying, well, teacher, look, if you'd give us the examination results, it'd be so much easier. We wouldn't have to work so hard this term. Well, what teacher in his senses would listen to that? He'd be doing them a disservice. If our friends charged in here, opened their secrets, gave us their constitution, their laws of government, their systems, and there it all is. Right, we might even accept it, we might even apply it. But you surely notice that nothing is really satisfactory that you haven't worked and sweated for and found out yourself. Free gifts on a plate are all very well at certain times and in very limited quantities. But a big thing cannot just be given away free, because it backfires. It achieves the exact opposite result of what was hoped for. Just as television is practically the death blow to any intelligent conversation or family life, because here you have a huge entertainment, potted entertainment, coming out of a pipe practically, and you can have it whenever you want. It's no fun anymore. It's not nearly so much fun as the old days when one made one's own entertainment. One got up little family concerts. One did things oneself. You see, here again, we're getting up to the cosmic rule that the great thing is thou shalt do things thyself. We're not just like plants and cabbages which sit there in the sun, and when the sun shines and there's a right amount of moisture, they blossom. And if there isn't, they don't. We are more active than that. If there isn't sun for us, we can go out and find it. We are on the move. The life principle is so powerful in us that we are rushing round, doing things for ourselves, finding out. So all science, culture, art is a splendid thing, even though we have to do it the hard way. For every 10 turnings we take, 9 are blind alleys. All right, we make slow but certain progress that way. But one scientist was upbraided for saying, if the force has landed, told us their secrets, I shouldn't want to listen to them. Well, in a way, he was right. What he meant is that they were take away all the work set for us. Now, I think they're going to give us hints. They may even give us more than that. But let's not be impatient. This thing's only been going on 9 years. It's probably got to go on for another 90 or another 900 years. I don't know. The speed at which knowledge is given to us will be the speed at which we prepare ourselves to receive it.